Welcome to Puentes, Bridges to the Community. Hello, I'm your host, Emily Guerra. My guest on this edition is 1990s past president of MANA and creator and former director of Enlace, Elisa Maria Sanchez. A lifelong feminist activist, Sanchez grew up in Grant County. She received a Bachelor of Arts and Master of Arts in Business and Education from Western New Mexico University, and a master's in public administration from Baruch College, City University of New York. Hispanic Business Magazine named her one of the 100 most influential Hispanics in the United States in 1996 and again in 1998. As part of the 60th anniversary of the film The Salt of the Earth, Sanchez will be celebrating the life of her mother, Angelina J. Sanchez, who was a main character in the movie and active on the picket line. The New Mexico State University Foundation and the College of Education will be co-sponsoring a week-long celebration March 10th through the 14th about issues the strike and the film raised. Hello, Elisa. Thank you for joining me on Puentes.
Hi, Emily. Thank you very much for inviting me.
What inspired you to become an activist?
Well, being a Mexican-American, my life is very, I think, at least I try to live it, very value-driven. And so a lot of the values that are important to me come directly out of my Mexican culture. And one of those things is that we honor our ancestors. And so I have tried to honor my mother and my father, who were both absolutely wonderful persons. We're going to talk a little bit more about my mother, but just let me say, there's a saying that nothing makes a man a feminist faster than to have daughters he loves. And that really is true of my father. He was absolutely believed that my sister and I should have all the opportunities that were available to everybody, that we shouldn't not have those opportunities just because we were women. And then my mother was an actual activist, so I saw the work. I didn't hear just the words. And so it's important to me to honor the two of them, because in my sense, both my mother and my father and all the working people of Grant County are giants, and I stand on their shoulders. I have today and have had an incredible life and continue to have an incredible life in retirement because of the doors that those people opened. And it's important for me to honor them every time that I have the opportunity. I don't want them to be forgotten. And so when my mother died in 2009, I endowed a scholarship here at New Mexico State in her honor, because she was, like I said, she was an activist, not in word, but in deed. And the scholarship is really for Latino students to travel and study abroad. And to me, that's very important. It's part of who my mother was. My mother was born in Mexico, and her family crossed the border during the Mexican Revolution. Although my grandfather had been born in the Mimbres, and he was an American citizen because he was here when the border closed. But to her, it was really important to travel and to see things and to expose yourself to a lot of everything, because it made you a better person. And in that sense, you know, one of the things that was really great about my mom is, you know, she read the Odyssey to me before I even went to the first grade. And I can remember she would say to me, "Mija, if you don't understand a word or something that the story's about, you ask me and I will tell you." So, you know, I traveled the world with Odysseus, and I stayed at home and wept for him to come home with Penelope. And those were the kinds of things that my mother brought to my life besides her activism. And in terms of our celebrating Salt of the Earth, this is the 60th anniversary of the release of the film. And my mother would go and march on the picket line, and I went and marched with her. She was very active with the Women's Auxiliary. And those particular women, you know, although at that time, certainly the Women's Auxiliary was like behind the door and they cooked and they made coffee, but there was a very strong group of women. And when the actual strike took place, those women took over the picket line. So as a little kid, I marched on that picket line with my mother. And what I saw is a lot of really strong Latina women that were really believed in their community. They believed in their own power. They believed in their own abilities. And they went out there and they worked hard and they actually won that strike. So, I mean, you know, that was for me a seminal moment at 10 years of age to see my mother, an absolutely wonderful Latina, strong women. And there were times on the picket line, and it's interesting because this is not part of the film, but there were times when the picket line was quiet, that it was just a whole bunch of us kids marching around in the picket line and having a grand old time. But we knew why we were there. We knew why we were fighting, and we knew that we were at our mother's sides in that struggle. They were just fighting for equality for the men at the mine and at the smelter and at the other mine to be able to have equal pay for equal work, to be able to move beyond being a laborer into better paying jobs. They were also fighting for better living conditions.
This was the Empire Zinc strike before right. the making of the film had even right. come about.
And so what's interesting about the film and the strike is I've always thought to myself, had it not been for the film, the strike would have never been, nobody would have ever really known about it, although maybe a few people in New Mexico. So it was a story that needed to be told. And at the same time, because it was Mexican-American workers that were being discriminated against, at the same time, here were these filmmakers in Washington who were also being discriminated against because somebody was saying, you know, you're a communist and you're this and that. They were being blacklisted and not being able to work. So they were looking for a story to tell. So it's the synchronicity of those two events, I think, is absolutely unbelievable because they might have found an interesting story to tell. I'm sure they would have because they were very talented. But at the same time, they found our story. And that is what I think is so great about those two events.
What is the most important thing about the film, The Salt of the Earth?
Well, what people have to remember about Salt of the Earth is that really it is a true story. Now, it's been dramatized, and there's a love story and things like that. But the actual essence of the story is what really happened. We lived it. And then Salt of the Earth itself is a story. I remember as a kid when they were filming, we'd go to school, and then there were times when, I swear, there must have been every state police in New Mexico was in Grant County because the communists were coming. And I can remember, and I think this is where I got to be really assertive, that we had teachers that would say, well, you know, the communists are in town, and you know, you've got to go home early because I don't know what the communists were going to do to us. But they'd send us home early. Well, I knew my mother was in the film. She was over there filming. And I used to get with the teachers and say, wait a minute, I don't know who the heck you're talking about, but my mother isn't a communist. My mother is fighting over there for our rights, and she's telling our story. But it was really interesting. And I guess in the final analysis, there were communists there. They didn't hurt us, but they told our story. And that's fine with me.
So in learning about being an activist through your mother, that brought you then as a past president of MANA. Well, tell me a little bit about what MANA was. Some people know it as a national Latino organization, but tell me more about it.
Well, MANA started in 1974 in Washington, D.C. by a handful of women who were concerned that as the women's movement was taking off, the voice of Latinas, or in that case, Mexican women, was nowhere to be heard. And so they began to organize and say that we needed to be at the table when the issues of facing women that were also affecting us were being discussed. When administrative decisions were being made about programs, we needed to be at the table. So they began to organize in 74. I moved to Washington, D.C. in 1975, and at that time, the organizing was continuing, so I got very involved in the organization, joined the organization, and in 1977, I was elected president. I served for 2 years, and then I continued my participation in the organization when I moved to San Diego and helped organize that chapter there. And then in the 1990s, I moved back to D.C., and I was elected national president again. And so I served from 1996 to 1999. But that time, it wasn't just the presidency. It was also the chief administrative officer of the organization. So I wore two hats at that time.
And MANA is like also hermana?
The initial acronym was Mexican American Women's National Association. We left the W out because, like in New Mexico, we don't do that so much anymore, but we used to call each other manitas or mana. Oye, es mana. So it was like a hey, sister. And so the acronym was MANA, and it stood for Mexican American Women's National Association. Later on, there were more women that were Latinas, but not Mexican, that began to join the organization because they liked what we were doing and the positions that we were taking. So then the group said, you know, wait a minute, we need to honor all women and all women who are Latinas. And so the name changed to MANA, comma, a national Latina organization. And that's the name that it has today.
What was really important back in the 70s, issues that were present that affected Latina women?
There were several, but one especially that was really, really crucial. And that was that in Los Angeles at the General Hospital there, they were sterilizing Mexican women when a woman had birth. And they would say to her things like, well, would you like to be sterilized? Or if she didn't understand what that meant, they would call whoever could translate. And usually it was like a janitor or somebody like that. If you will recall, back in the 60s, 70s, we sterilized bottles, we sterilized glasses, we sterilized our dishes, and it meant that you were free of germs. So when a doctor would come to a woman that didn't quite understand what he was saying, would you like to be sterilized? Well, she might say yes. And if she didn't say yes, she still got sterilized. And then it would be years later that she would say, well, why am I not having kids? And go to the doctor, and the doctor would say, well, you can't have children because you were sterilized. Well, what does that mean? It means that, you know, they cut your tubes or whatever it was that they were doing. So the MALDEF filed a suit against the hospital saying that it was a civil rights issue. We heard about it in D.C. and decided that it wasn't enough to just file a suit against one hospital, that we needed to have regulations that protected people. In this case, it was women, but protected people that had another language, that weren't quite clear about what was they were being told. So we, in fact, I testified for the organization in front of the Congress. You know, it's interesting, they don't hardly ever invite those just amateurs like we were to testify before the Congress. But in those days, I got an opportunity to testify on this particular issue, on domestic violence, on several other issues. And then when the Congress of the United States passed the law that said, yes, you needed to give information in a language that the person understood, then we helped the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare develop the regulations. Actually, the voice of MANA is affecting us today. It's always interesting to me because today you can go to the hospital or to the doctor and they'll give you a form that says, do you understand what is it that's being told? Or they give it to you in Spanish and in English. And I think it makes me really proud to know that my little organization has something to do with that. And so that was one of the big issues that we were addressing way back then.
And do you think some of the issues back in the 70s are still present today?
Well, you know what they are, except they've gone underground. I think a lot of what's going on today is racism is alive and well. It's just more covert.
In what way?
Well, all you have to do is look around and say, okay, New Mexico State University, let's take that as an example. If you ask people, well, how many Latino faculty members do you think New Mexico State University has? Oh, they'll say, oh, well, you know, I bet you it's about 50%. Well, it's not. It's probably less than 10. So the thing is that I have seen, for example, search committees with individual faculty members on the search committees that don't have half the experience or half the publications of the person they're interviewing sitting there saying, well, your publications aren't necessarily the kind that I think. So that it becomes a different way of not giving people an opportunity to participate.
Do you think it's part of the educational system?
Well, yes. You know what? When I was in school, nobody encouraged me. If my parents had not believed that we should go to college and gave me that message on a regular basis, they always said, mija, when you go to college, not if you go to college, but when you go to college. So to me, it was a given. But nobody in the schools encouraged me, and nobody sat me down and said, these are the things that you need in order to be able to go to college. Somewhere I heard that you had to have 4 years of English to get into school. So I really fought with my counselor in high school for 4 years of English. I don't know where I got that information, But, you know, with the Enlace program, we were dealing with a lot of Latino kids in school. And this is, you know, in the 2000s. And a lot of kids had never met with their counselor. A lot of kids had never been talked to about going on to school. So, yes, racism is alive and well. And, you know, the kids still aren't getting the message that they have the capability to be able to succeed.
On March 10th, you're going to be on a panel of guest speakers, Pláticas con Mujeres de Color, that's Talks with Women of Color, Finding Comfort in Our Skin. That'll be at 4 o'clock on Monday, March the 10th at O'Donnell Hall. Talk to me about Mujeres de Color, Women of Color, and what do you mean by finding comfort in our skin?
Well, before I tell you that, let me just say that is an open, it's not just for students, it's for the community. So all of that information will be in the paper. So if people in the community want to come and participate in any of the things that are going on that week, the community is very much invited. And we'd love to have you come and participate in any of the many events that are happening that week. And then on Friday night, we will be showing Salt of the Earth and doing a panel there. But back to your question. As minority women, first of all, you're a woman. And there's all kinds of issues of how people view you as a woman. I mean, the thing is that still there are barriers to us getting ahead. And then you add to that that you're a minority woman. That is an additional issue. And I think that and we live in two worlds. There's this whole issue of you need to become acculturated. Well, I really don't know what that means. I speak English. I live in this country. I pay taxes. I'm a good citizen. I don't break the law. But you know what? I'm also a really good Mexican American, and I love that. So I live in two worlds, and learning to be comfortable in your own skin is how do you take those two things and integrate them without losing either one or the other? So the thing is that to be comfortable in your own skin, to me, first of all, is you have to be real clear that you're comfortable being in both worlds. You can't think of yourself, well, I'm going to this place and, you know, they're going to look at me and maybe I don't speak English as well as everybody else, or maybe I make a mistake. So you have to be real clear and real proud of what you are. And it's not an easy task, because I can remember growing up, we were called dirty Mexicans. And even today, you're maybe not called a dirty Mexican, but a lot of the rhetoric against being a Mexican is addressed to the, quote, undocumented or illegal alien. And my sense is, when you talk about that person is me. And so,
but you were born here. You weren't an undocumented.
I'm not. But I'm also a Mexican, and a very proud Mexican. And I think that Mexican culture has given me all kinds of wonderful things to be proud of. I love my history. I love my culture. I love the things that I've learned about honoring my mother and my father, about honoring my ancestors. I love my food. But that doesn't mean that I don't love to go downtown and eat some Vietnamese food or Thai food or a hamburger. But when you, and I feel real strongly about this, if you're putting somebody down that looks like me and talks like me and has a last name like mine, you're talking about me. And it's interesting because I've got Mexican friends that are not comfortable with who they are. So people will say horrible things in front of them and they'll shut up. They'll never say a word. And I'm not one of those people. I will speak up, and I honor and I respect other people. But you know what? They need to honor and respect me too. And that comes with being comfortable with who you are. But it's a process. It's not something you just say, well, okay, next week I want to be comfortable in my own skin. When you live in an environment that is constantly putting you down and really finding negatives about who you are, it's hard. It's hard. In keeping with the issue of being comfortable in your own skin, one of the issues, too, is that in New Mexico, we have a lot of role models. We have a Latina governor. We have a lot of people that serve on the city council, on the county commission. We have a city manager that is a Latino. But when you look at the broader country, we really are invisible. We're just not there. So if there's a young woman that says, you know, I'd like to be an actress, but she doesn't see any role models. When you look at television today, for example, and I guess most people watch a significant amount of television. Who is it that we see? The only Latina that is in a major role on television is Sofia Vergara. So if there's a young woman that has a desire to be creative in that way, there's nowhere that she could turn. And it's really true of all of our kids. We really are invisible in the broader society. So how can you be comfortable in your own skin when you are invisible? So it's important then that we begin to open up all of these doors. And the only way we can do that is by speaking up, by saying, you know what? It's not acceptable for us to be invisible. We're a part and parcel of this country. So please, if you're interested in that particular issue, come to the event on Monday, March the 10th at 4 o'clock in O'Donnell Hall. The guest speakers will be Jonah O. Garcia, Senator Mary Jane Garcia, Olga Pedrosa, who is on our city council, and Cristina Chavez Kelly, who is a VP here at the university. Everybody has a different perspective, and I think it's important that we hear from everybody.
And that's here at New Mexico State University. And the events are free to the community, students, staff, and faculty on Monday, March the 10th at 4 p.m. at O'Donnell Hall at New Mexico State University. Then Wednesday, there'll be a talk about activism in film with Dr. Philip Lewis. He'll lead a discussion on the 1954 film, The Salt of the Earth, which you touched on, growing up, living the actual film or actual strike.
The strike and the making of the film.
And then on Thursday, March the 13th at 2:30 p.m. at O'Donnell Hall, Women Leaders, What Does It Take to Be a Good Leader, Especially for a Minority Woman? You'll be leading that discussion. So what does it take to be a good leader?
Well, I'm not going to tell you because you have to come to the event. Actually, it's going to be a discussion. It will not be a presentation. I want to have a discussion with the people that are there. What makes a good leader? And do we have stereotypes about what leadership is and what it isn't? And it's really interesting because women leaders and women minority women leaders have different styles of leadership. And so we're going to talk about that. And so I don't want to let the cat out of the bag.
And then on Friday, March the 14th at 4:30 will be a special viewing of the film Salt of the Earth and with a critical dialogue. Well, the Salt of the Earth Film Festival events are part of an endowment fund, which is celebrating Angelina G. Sanchez, your mother.
Right.
Tell me more about this endowment.
Well, the endowment is created for Latino students studying here at New Mexico State University to study abroad. And so, although everything is free and we encourage as many people to come and take advantage of all of the events, we will be asking if people would like to donate to increase the amount of the endowment, because the larger the endowment, the larger the amount of interest that we can use then to help more students participate and travel abroad. And the research has shown that any student that travels abroad and gets a broader perspective of the world is a better student. And so this endowment is really important. 5 students have already taken advantage of it, and we will hear from at least one of those students at the event on Friday night.
Well, thank you again, Elisa Maria Sanchez, past president of MANA and a creator and former director of Enlace, to join us here on Puentes, being a bridge to the community, which you have been a bridge to the community nationwide, and celebrating the film and the life of your mother, Angelina G. Sanchez.
Thank you for the invitation.
You're welcome. For KRWG, I'm Emily Guerra.